energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. President John F. Kennedy, young, heroic, charismatic, embodied the promise of hope in America. Though his term lasted only 1,036 days, it was ended by an assassin's bullet in November of 1963. 100 years after his birth, the youngest man ever elected president, once urged Americans to strive for the new frontier, is still a political icon. And today, the day of his birth, 100 years ago, we celebrate his legacy. Joining us to talk about JFK is renowned historian, presidential historian Douglas Brinkley. He's a professor of history at Rice University, a CNN presidential historian. He is a member of the Society of American Historians and the Council of Foreign Relations. His new book is entitled JFK, A Vision for America, and Douglas Brinkley joins us this morning. Good morning, Doug. Doug, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you. Beautiful book celebrating President Kennedy today on the centennial of his birth. Over 500 photographs, drafts of his speeches, notes from important meetings, all focusing on a wide range of topics. If you didn't have a full knowledge of JFK's presidency, this book will get the job done.
Well, you know, it was important to do something for John F. Kennedy's 100th birthday. And I teach at Rice University, where famously JFK came in front of a football crowd, about 40,000 people, and said, "We're going to put a man to the moon by the end of the decade." And that speech is just so remarkable, because Kennedy says we're going to go to the moon because it's there. We don't need any more justification, that human beings like to explore and that we're going to get there. Well, we got a lot out of going to the moon, not just having Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walk on it, but all sorts of technology that we use today came out of the moonshot. You know, people listening right now, they use GPS, for example. That came out of the moonshot effort. So, I think Kennedy's used to be thought mainly for the Cuban Missile Crisis and Peace Corps, perhaps his astute handling of the Berlin Crisis, but more and more, it's the fact that he led our country to a huge bipartisan effort to the moon that is most memorable.
He was the youngest person ever elected to the White House at 43, although I discovered that Teddy Roosevelt had succeeded to the presidency at age 42 when William McKinley died in 1901 and was the only Roman Catholic ever to serve as president. He became the first TV president. Historically, right here in Chicago, when he debated Nixon, and even as he settled into the presidency, he used television extensively to build on his celebrity.
Well, there's no question about it. And, those debates in 1960, those were the first in U.S. history. Sometimes people think there was, Lincoln Douglas was a presidential debate. There were zilch, none before those ones between Kennedy and Nixon. Those that listen on radio thought Nixon won, and those who watched the debates on television thought it was Kennedy. And alas, it had become the TV age, and Kennedy was our first telegenic president. He really invented the modern press conference, where you would come out and take questions from reporters, and that whole give and take that we've become so used to. And he loved photography and loved having style, the top style photographers in the world really swirl around them often. He was very comfortable with that. So the imagery that comes out of what becomes known as Camelot, the Kennedy years, is quite a pronounced amount of, quantity, but it's just some beautiful stuff.
There was quite a bit of glamour surrounding their presidency and his wife, Jackie. I mean, it was quintessential America. I mean, everybody wanted to be like them and everybody watched them. Really, as royalty, as we watch the royal family in Great Britain, that's kind of how the Kennedys lived on television and to the general public. That's how people treated him.
Well, that's right. And, CBS and NBC started covering the backstory to the Kennedy's life, you know, the playground of Hyannisport. There's Kennedy taking a walk. There he is sailing. It really became good ratings getting. People with Kennedy watching became almost a sport. And then, of course, you have the assassination. And when he's shot in Dallas, the whole country tunes in, watches television, and mourns the loss and tries to solve the mystery of who killed Kennedy. If you ask people the most dramatic moment in U.S. history that they remember, it's usually Pearl Harbor, if you live long enough, followed by the Kennedy assassination and 9/11.
Absolutely. Absolutely. JFK, right from the beginning, Doug, he inspired the country, especially young people, to enter public service with a call in that inaugural address that we were listening to earlier by creating the Peace Corps, VISTA, and recruiting thousands of people to volunteer their time and energy for worthy causes and to serve in government. No other president really did that like that.
No, he decided that he was going to make public service his big calling card. That's why that's the famous line in his inaugural address. But that idea came out of a young person who had served in World War II as a junior lieutenant. That generation became a lot about public service. They had, their early years, they saw their friends shot up in some fly speck Pacific Island or in the European theater. And they believed in service. In other words, there was that generation of Americans who fought at D-Day or at Okinawa. And Kennedy had become the exemplar of them all. And he was bringing that spirit of, we're all in it together, of World War II into the 1960s. There was a feeling that public service was very flat during the Truman and Eisenhower years. And Kennedy was hoping to jack it up.
Now, he also, Doug, surrounded himself with strong-minded advisors and encouraged them to disagree with him so he could get their unvarnished views. He surrounded himself by smart people. He really did.
There's no question. I mean, they're called the best and the brightest crowd, but people like McGeorge Bundy was his national security advisor, and Robert McNamara as Secretary of Defense. Stuart Udall, the greatest Secretary of Interior in U.S. history, and under Kennedy, we started looking at how to clean the environment. In fact, John F. Kennedy saved Cape Cod National Seashore and Padre Island, Texas, Point Reyes, California. He started fighting for wilderness lands designation where no roads were allowed to be built. And most pronouncedly, he embraced a book called Silent Spring, by Rachel Carson in 1962, and Silent Spring was an attack on big chemical companies, manufacturers of DDT. So really you get the birth of the modern environmental movement beginning under Kennedy. The point is he liked intellectuals, he liked smart people, he was comfortable in that milieu. He was a writer himself. He'd won a Pulitzer Prize for Profiles in Courage. After World War II, he had been a journalist and attended such momentous events as the Potsdam Conference in Germany or the opening of the United Nations in San Francisco. So he was somebody comfortable around reporters and writers and intellectuals.
Doug, this is Dave Schwann in the WGN newsroom. You mentioned the people that President Kennedy surrounded himself with, and certainly intellectuals. And someone who's always been outstanding in my mind was Ted Sorensen, his speechwriter, who wrote many of the eloquent phrases that we remember. Mr. Sorensen said, though, that ultimately the president took responsibility for that. But certainly Ted Sorensen figures very prominently in this administration, don't you think?
I think he's the most important new frontiersman, as they were called. Ted Sorensen came out of Nebraska and became a great friend of John F. Kennedy, and they were virtually inseparable. You have John F. Kennedy basically running for president for 5 years, 1955 to 1960. He had aimed at the prize that early on, and often he would just fly places with Ted Sorensen. Sorensen became his friend and alter ego, a person he could say and tell anything to. And if you were going to write a history of close confidants to a president, almost a model would be Kennedy and Sorensen. They were a tandem for sure.
Doug, stick around. We're talking to presidential historian Douglas Brinkley on the centennial of JFK's birth, and there's more after a look at your morning traffic. Susan?
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
Dave Plyer in for Steve this Memorial Day, which is also the 100th anniversary of JFK's birth, and we're talking to presidential historian Douglas Brinkley in his new book, JFK, A Vision for America. Doug, great insights in this book from some of today's political contemporaries, historians, and others as well. I'm looking at this list, Senator John McCain, Elizabeth Warren, the Dalai Lama, Robert Redford, Conan O'Brien, David McCullough. I mean, the list is endless.
Yeah, we got the best people to write an original essay about an aspect of John F. Kennedy's life, mainly anchored around a particular speech. Conan O'Brien, for example, on comedy, Kennedy was an extremely funny, self-deprecating person, and it would flash all the time, particularly in his press conferences. His timing was really that of a comic, and it's one of the reasons he's endearing to people. David McCullough took on the fact that Kennedy was a historian and how deeply he read into the works of people like Theodore Roosevelt and Winston Churchill. For a while, he thought he wanted to be a historian, but he was constantly reading and quoting from people ranging from Francis Parkman, our great author of The Oregon Trail, who he liked to quote, to the poet Robert Frost, who was at Kennedy's inaugural. Some call Frost the great New England poet. So there was a sense of intellectual excitement about the Kennedy years. It was a good time if you were a poet or a writer, a musician, somebody who was known as a philosopher. You could suddenly be part of the White House swirl.
Well, he not only felt that knowledge of history was important, but it was influential in his decision-making throughout his presidency.
Well, look, he had read Barbara Tuchman's The Guns of August, which was about how we stumbled into World War I. And having read that at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, he became determined not to follow the folly of the Tuchman book, meaning not to stumble into World War III over missiles in Cuba, and instead find a determined way to avoid a direct armed conflict with the Soviet Union. And it was a nerve-wracking time, the Cuban Missile Crisis, but at the end of the line, the Kennedy administration had astutely navigated us through those dangerous days.
He had a 83% approval rating not long after he became president. And obviously throughout his presidency and even, 50-some years later, people have tremendous respect for him. But he also had tremendous flaws as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, after his first 100 days, he had had a terrible blunder, the Bay of Pigs, the kind of idiotic plan for Cubans living in Florida in exile to kind of invade Cuba and topple Castro. The whole thing blew up. It was a terribly planned and, actualized invasion. Kennedy, however, took blame for it. He said, the buck stops here. It's my fault. Even though it was a Kennedy Kennedy inherited the plan of Eisenhower's CIA. People liked that, that he took blame for that. He actually went up in the polls. And in that same first 100 days, he created the Peace Corps, which became popular, and he articulated a new alliance of progress with Latin America. Also, he became a popular American president. The flaws on John F. Kennedy that we look at as historians is largely his womanizing.
Right.
The fact of the matter is he was constantly on the prowl, would have Secret Service or friends find him women in different towns when he would travel. And it led to some insecurity around him. I mean, he never knew who Kennedy was going to be with and where. Some of that, of course, gets exaggerated in some books, but serious scholars recognize that he was constantly living on the edge, so to speak, and it was in need of sexual fulfillment.
Doug, 100 years from now, how will JFK be best remembered, in your opinion?
Well, he's always going to stay young. I mean, we're all getting older. We all get wrinkles and get gray. Unfortunately, due to the assassination, he's frozen in time as the young and gallant and handsome president shot down in the peak of his life. I think the assassination will remain a big whodunit, something that people question and study. But it's the fact of his can-doism, that symbol of saying we're going to go to the moon by the end of the decade and then America achieves it. We love that, to believe that our best American quality is our sense of can-doism. And Kennedy, through a combination of rhetoric, oratory, hunch, and a political skill, was able to get us pointed to breaking the shackles of planet Earth.
Doug, we talked a lot about Kennedy's speech about sending a man to the moon. And last December, you met with President Trump before he was president. The conversation focused on Nixon, Reagan, and Kennedy, and about potentially sending another man to the moon, correct? Or Mars?
Yeah, I work for CNN, and I was curious about how NASA was going to fare in the Trump years. It was never really talked about on the campaign trail, and I still don't know if I got an answer from our current president, but he seemed to believe, he thought that sending somebody back into space or doing something big, it was good for what he said, the American spirit, that he saw the benefits less in terms of the technology, which I was mentioning, medical devices, GPS, et cetera, as it's something that might unify the country together. But at last, I don't see the kind of money being put into a NASA budget that Trump's proposing that would do those giant leaps forward like Kennedy did in the early 60s to get us to the moon.
And before I let you go, when you watch the first 4-plus months of Donald Trump's presidency, and as a historian, how are you viewing the current culture in the White House?
Well, it's not working well.
Yeah.
The White House is filled with leaks. We have a president who's not operating at the 80% mark as Kennedy did, but is instead on a good day now at 40%. And that means he has 60% of the American public already distrustful of them. So he's got to find a way to move that number up. You've got to govern at 50% or more. You need to have the majority of the American people backing your action. Donald Trump doesn't have that going for him at this time. He hasn't been able to find an issue that defines him, one that captures the imagination of the public. Instead, he seems to be a very polarized person who one part of America likes and a large other part doesn't, but hasn't been able to find something to bring us together the way Kennedy did with the moonshot.
Something new every day. Douglas Brinkley, the new book is JFK, A Vision for America. Get at your local bookseller or wherever books are sold. Doug, always a pleasure, and enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.